One of the things that we like to talk about when we talk about the seven factors for awakening is just the way that Ajahn Jeff translates this. It often gets translated as seven factors of awakening, the implication being that when you awaken, and of course we can think about what it means to awaken, when you awaken, then these factors will be fully developed. Part of the problem is, our conception of what awakening is. And we can think about awakening in much more simple terms than we often think about what awakening is. First and foremost, awakening is being awake, beginning to become awake to what we need to do to be happy, where happiness lies, and what we're doing in terms of the way that we're living and the actions that we're taking, and are they really in support of what we would call true happiness, or are we looking for happiness in other things? So we awaken to that. And then we awaken in the mind when we begin to clear the mind, and it's a process of clearing the mind of the mists, the dream state of thinking, when we begin to clear the heart of aversion and desire. So in those moments, when the heart is clear, those are awakened moments. So the Buddha said, a moment of loving kindness, in those moments we're not experiencing aversion and desire, and we're awake in those moments. So, one of the things we need to kind of do is have a demystified understanding of what awakening is, and then it's a lot easier to understand this teaching as factors for awakening, that these factors are developed in the service of awakening. So they're not factors that all of a sudden manifest when we become awakened. They're factors that we need to develop if we are going to experience awakening. And of course, it's a progressive process. It's a process of developing these factors. And the first factor, the seven factors, of course, are mindfulness, analysis of qualities, effort, rapture, tranquility, concentration, and equanimity. The first factor will be the one I'll discuss a little bit tonight. It will be the factor of mindfulness. So, we begin to develop mindfulness. We begin to develop this factor of mindfulness. It's the first, we start developing all these factors in the first beginner's class. Actually, you have these factors as part of your human potential, so even before you meditate, they're developed to some extent, probably not enough to get you to awakening, but you have those factors. It's a matter of developing them. So in the first beginner's class, we begin very consciously through following the Buddha's instructions to develop mindfulness. So, that really asks that we understand what the Buddha talks about when he talks about mindfulness. Ajahn Jeff and I had a nice discussion about this. I believe it was at the monastery, maybe it was when he was here in March, about the cultural definition of mindfulness that's evolved over the last 20 years or so versus the Buddhist definition. And there being, a fair amount of difference between those two things, And we both agree that, it was okay that there's the cultural definition that exists, and as opposed to saying, well, that's the wrong definition, rather to say, well, that's one kind of mindfulness, but it's not the Buddha's mindfulness. And the Buddha's mindfulness is a little different, and for those factors to develop, and as if one of those factors of awakening, we need to develop the Buddha's mindfulness, not so much that cultural definition of mindfulness, which is okay to develop also, but that's not going to get us to where we need to get to in order to develop mindfulness as it relates to the Buddha's teaching. So I just did a quick Google on mindfulness, and this was kind of the first thing that came up, where this is a definition of mindfulness that's fairly prevalent. Mindfulness means maintaining moment-by-moment awareness of our thoughts, feelings, bodily sensations, and surrounding environment. Mindfulness also involves acceptance, meaning that we pay attention to our thoughts and feelings without judging them, without believing, for instance, that there's a right or wrong way to think or feel in a given moment. Well, the first definition of mindfulness isn't really the Buddhist definition of mindfulness at all. It's sort of what they're defining as sometimes what's called bare awareness. So there's that maintaining moment-by-moment awareness of our thoughts. Oh, there's a thought about that. Oh, there's an emotion. Oh, there's a sensation in the leg. Oh, there's Kristen. Oh, there's Tom. Oh, I'm feeling a little warm. You know, that's sort of this free-floating idea of what mindfulness is. Quite different than the Buddha's definition. And then, of course, he says here, the definition here says, mindfulness also involves acceptance, which really, you know, it's really important to understand that acceptance is a separate quality. You know, it's not included in mindfulness. That's really important to understand, because if you begin to conflate acceptance and mindfulness, you're really not going to be able to develop mindfulness or acceptance. So, it's important to kind of understand what the Buddha's definition is, because, you know, we were kind of fighting an uphill battle, because the definition of mindfulness that's out there is, you know, really becoming sort of the accepted definition of mindfulness in the cultural lexicon. So, you know, the Buddha's definition of mindfulness is actually really quite simple. It means to put the mind on. So to put the mind on an object. So as opposed to this kind of free-floating, oh, there's feeling of being cold, oh, there's the thought about that, oh, this, whatever. It's to put your mind, so it's a very proactive process of putting your mind on an object, A, and B, keeping your mind on the object. So really simple, to put the mind on an object and to keep the mind on an object. So, and of course the Buddha goes one step further. He says there's mindfulness and then there's right mindfulness. So mindfulness means to put your mind on an object. Right mindfulness is, you know, these are the places where you should put your mind. Because there's a lot of places where we can put our minds. A lot of places where we can put our minds. But the Buddha is very specific about mindfulness in terms of, you know, the Buddha's mindfulness or right mindfulness. And of course he says there's these four places where we can put our minds. If we put our minds in these four places, you know, we'll alleviate suffering and move towards a greater happiness. So I'm not going to go through these four places in general, but they're what's known as the four foundations of mindfulness, the four establishings of mindfulness, the four frames of reference. The first to be mindful of the body, which begins with the breath, of course. And really that's what we start with in the beginner's class. Put your mind on the breath. You know, mindfulness of the body, because these are progressive mindfulnesses, developmental, you know, really serves as the ground, the center, the foundation for all mindfulness. And all the mindfulnesses we practice are mindfulness with the breathing as a center. So there's mindfulness of the breath. When the breath, the concentration becomes developed, then you can practice the other mindfulnesses. And again, I'm not going to go through these chapter and verse, but the second frame of reference to be mindful of the sensations in the body and how your mind is relating to them. Okay, because that's one of the great causes of our suffering is generally unpleasant sensations in the body and aversion to them. So to be mindful of that. The third foundation of mindfulness is be mindful of mental states as they arise and how you're relating to those. Because that's, of course, the other great source of our suffering. A mental state arises, aversion, anger, not a problem, but we hold on. So understanding our relationship to those experiences. The third foundation is what's known as mental qualities, and there's several of them and that we have to look at, and they're sort of like this little, these are, you know, really specific things that you can be mindful of. One of them is be mindful of the five hindrances. So even in the class a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about, you know, mindful of the breath, mindful of the breath. And somebody said, you know, but I know you're saying that, but, you know, sometimes all this stuff comes up when I'm trying to do that. Well, then you have to shift your mindfulness to mindfulness of the hindrances. One of those mindfulnesses is mindfulness of the seven factors of awakening. So there's actually mindfulness of mindfulness, which means, you know, am I being mindful? To what extent am I being mindful? Seeing that. But again, that's just to give you a sense of the places where we need to put the mind. It all begins with the body and it begins with the breathing. The Buddha said, of course, if you can keep your mind in these places, if you can put your mind here, you will move towards a greater happiness in your life. This is the proper range. This is the territory where, you know, and if you go outside that territory, you're going to suffer. You go outside that range, you're going to suffer. It all begins with the body and the breath. If you're mindful of the breath, if you put the mind on the breath, the path will unfold. So, you know, we always kind of talk about cause and effect, you know, to develop that quality of mindfulness, and then the other factors of awakening, you know, it begins with being mindful of the breathing. The Buddha says, mindful of the breath enables you to be mindful of the four frames of reference. So you can be mindful of the breath, and you can be mindful of the full body. You can be mindful of the sensations, the emotions, etc. You know, but it all begins with mindfulness of the breathing. So, you know, the short piece here is like, you know, we talk about, you know, mindfulness and be mindful of that, you know, and the cultural definition and all of that stuff. Most of your mindfulness, if you want to follow the Buddha's instructions, most of the mindfulness that you'll be doing will be mindfulness of the breath. Now, that's going to be the lion's share. Now, there may be another 5% when you're being mindful of everything, but most of your mindfulness is being mindful of the breath. I mean, once I understood that was revelatory for me, because I thought, oh, I got to be mindful of this, that, the other thing. Mostly, you need to be mindful of the breath. Mostly, and you know, he says, if you can do that, you know, the other things will fall into place. It's almost like, don't even worry so much about the other things. Be mindful of the breath. Now, of course, as we talked about in class, yeah, you do need to bring in that mindfulness of the hindrances, etc. But if you're really practicing mindfulness the way you know, the Buddha teaches to be practicing mindfulness, most of the time what you're going to be mindful of is the breathing. I mean, you know, think about it. You're walking down the street. You know, of course, we're talking about all postures here, right? You're walking down the street, you know, it's going to behoove you to be mindful of the breath. Usually we're walking down the street and we're out of our proper territory. You know, you're lost in thought. It would be really wonderful if you could say, well, I could be mindful of this. Not going to happen. You're going to get lost in thought. So it's this very proactive process of putting the mind on the breath in the sitting meditation in all postures. One of my favorite suttas is the sutta on mindfulness of breathing, which begins like this. I have heard that on one occasion the Blessed One was staying at Sawati in the Eastern Monastery, together with many well-known elder disciples, with Venerable Sariputta, Venerable Maha Moggallana, Venerable Maha Kassapa, Venerable Maha Kachana, Venerable Maha Kotita, Venerable Maha Kapina, Venerable Maha Chunda, Venerable Ravata, Venerable Anatta, and other well-known disciples. So it's kind of like conference, you know, with all the heavy hitters, you know. On that occasion, the elder monks were teaching and instructing. Some elder monks were teaching and instructing 10 monks. Some were teaching and instructing 20 monks. Some were teaching and instructing 30 monks. Some were teaching and instructing 40 monks. The new monks, being taught and instructed by the elder monks, were discerning grand successive distinctions. Sort of like what happens here, is we're discerning these successive distinctions. Now, on that occasion, the Blessed One was seated in the open air, surrounded by the community of monks. And the monks are meditating, surveying the silent, or listening to his talk, and surveying the silent community of monks, he addressed them. Monks, I am content with this practice. I am content at heart with this practice. So arouse even more intense persistence for the attaining of the as-yet unattained, the reaching of the as-yet unreached, the realization of the as-yet unrealized. I will remain right here for another month through the white water lily month, the fourth month of the rains. The monks in the countryside heard. Then the monks in the countryside heard, the Blessed One will remain right there at Sawati through the white water lily month. So they left for Sawati. So all these monks are saying, wow, the Buddha's there, we're going to go there. And this is sort of towards the end of the Buddha's life, and all these people are going to see him talk and to be with him. Then the elder monks taught and instructed, etc., etc. And then now on that occasion, during the White Water Lily month, the Blessed One was seated in the open air, surrounded by the community of monks. So it's even a bigger group. Surveying the silent community of monks, he addressed them. Monks, this assembly is free from idle chatter, free from, devoid of idle chatter, and is established on pure heartwork. Such as this community of monks, such as this assembly, the sort of assembly that is worthy of gifts, worthy of hospitality, worthy of offerings, worthy of respect, an incomparable field of merit for the world. Such as this community of monks, such as this assembly, the sort of assembly to which a small gift when given becomes great, and a greater gift, a gift greater, and a great gift greater. Such as this community of monks, such as this assembly, the sort of assembly that is rare to see in the this world, such as this community of monks, such as this assembly, the sort of assembly that it would be worth traveling for leagues, taking along provisions in order to see. And then he goes on to describe the community, and he begins by saying, in this community there are some monks who are arhants, fully awakened, some monks who are non-returners, some monks who are stream enterers, some monks, and so on and so forth, and some monks who are doing this and some monks who are doing that. And then he says, but in this community of monks, there are monks who remain devoted to mindfulness of breathing. You know, as to say, this is the heart practice. And then he goes on to give the instruction, the 16 steps of Anapanasati. And then he ends, after going over the steps of the breath meditation, he says, mindfulness of in and out breathing, when developed and pursued, is of great fruit, of great benefit. Mindfulness of in and out breathing, when developed and pursued, brings the four frames of reference to their culmination. The four frames of reference, when developed and pursued, bring the seven factors for awakening to their culmination. The seven factors for awakening, when developed and pursued, bring clear knowing and release to their culmination. So it all begins with mindfulness of the breathing. So, you know, the first thing we have to understand is what mindfulness is, to put the mind on, to keep the mind on, and then we have to understand how to do that. Because that's another step. How do you do that? How do you do that? How do you put the mind on the breath? How do you put the mind on the breath? You know, when I first started to learn this kind of meditation, and for the many years in my practice, you know, they said, be mindful of the breath. Yeah. So, all right, well, I did that. Sort of intuitively, I sort of knew what that was, but I didn't really know how I was doing that. I didn't really understand how I was doing that. You know, and then they said, well, when the mind wanders, put the mind back on the breath. You know, part of the problem was I didn't understand what I was doing in being mindful of the breath, in putting the mind on the breath, enough to be able to keep my mind on the breath. I didn't really know how my attention got there. I knew that it got there somehow, but I didn't know really how it got there. And if I didn't know how it got there, how could I keep it there? So it would just keep wandering off. You know, so then, all right, we'll be mindful of it again. But a lot of times the problem with that, of course, is once I started wandering off, I was lost and it was really hard to get back. It's very important to know what you're doing when you are putting the mind on the breath, because if you know what you're doing, then you can keep doing it. If you understand what you're doing, then your ability to do it grows exponentially. It's kind of like when I was in high school, you know, in auto shop. I didn't take auto shop. You know, I was in a different part of the building, but you know, I had a lot of friends who took it, you know. And in auto shop, you know, what they had my friends do who were taking auto shop is take apart the whole engine. Take apart the whole engine piece by piece by piece and lay out every piece and then put it back together. So they completely understood how that engine worked and what that engine was all about. And that's really what the Buddha, you know, that's the genius of the Buddha. You know, he wasn't working with a car engine, he was working with the human mind. And he understood every piece of that. He understood every piece of that. And by understanding every piece of that, he was able to use the mind in a way that could bring him to awakening. Just like if you understand every piece of that engine, you can keep the car going and get to where you need to go. So what he understood was that you put the mind on the breath, which is, you know, I was doing that for years, but I didn't really understand what I was doing it. You put the mind on the breath by fabricating the intention to put the mind on the breath, what he called internal verbal fabrication, which really simply means you say to yourself, put the mind on the breath. Now, all those years, I was doing that, you know, it wasn't covert. It was probably more subtle, intuitive, kinetic. You know, there was some intention to do that because the mind's not going to go to the breath unless you have, it's just not going to magically end up there. There was some quality in the mind, some movement in the mind that put the attention. I didn't really know how that was happening, so I couldn't replicate it and strengthen it to the point where I could really keep the mind there. But that's what we're doing, you know, so... You know, we call that directed thought. You know, and when the Buddha talks about this, you know, he puts it in quotations. You know? He says, mindful of the breath, I breathe in, mindful of the breath, I breathe out, in quotations. You know, that's what you have to do. He doesn't put it in quotations, you know, just because he likes quotations. You know, he puts it in quotations because it's something that you have to say to yourself. If it's something that you say to yourself, then you'll be more inclined to do it, you know, and you'll start saying it to yourself more and more, and, you know, you need to keep saying it to yourself. I mean, I was just saying it to myself once. I didn't really know what I was doing. The mind would wander off. All right, we'll come back. But the practice of directed thought and of mindfulness to keep the mind on is to keep directing the attention to the object, in this case, the breath. So this may sound all trite and mundane and kind of silly, but it's really the heart of the whole practice. It's the heart of the whole practice. So, you know, it's very intentional, this process of putting the mind on the breath. It's very intentional. It's very, and the more covert you can make that intention, the stronger that intention is going to get. So, you know, one of the things that we talk about is that mindfulness is very proactive. It's very proactive. It's not, oh, there's this, there's that, da, ba, ba, ba. It's, no, I'm going to put my mind there. You know, and the stronger your mindfulness is, will be determined by how much you're able to fabricate and put the mind there, how much directed thought you use. You know, so this is what it means to be mindful. This is what it means to be mindful. You know, and the thing about all of these factors for awakening, including, of course, mindfulness, is that you have this capacity. You have the capacity to be mindful. As a human being, you have this capacity to be mindful. You know, I mean, what that means is you have the capacity to put your mind where you want to put it. You know? And that if you use that capacity and use it in the right way, i.e. right mindfulness, that'll lead you to happiness. Now, most people don't use that capacity that they have. You know, so what does that mean? They just let the mind go wherever it wants to go. Most people's minds are untrained, so it just goes wherever it goes, usually into something unskillful, something that is, you know, a karmic way of wanting some kind of sense pleasure or some other kind of form of status or praise or gain, money, whatever it is, and the mind just keeps going in those directions. It's just going to go where it's going to go karmically if you just let it go. It's just out of control. Most people's minds are completely untrained and out of control. The thing of it is you have the capacity to train your mind. You have the capacity to put your mind where you want to put it. You have the capacity to put your mind where you need to put it in order to find happiness. The question is, are you going to develop that capacity? That's what mindfulness is. So you have the capacity to put the mind where you want to put it and keep it there. And it's as simple as practicing directed thought. Simple. Most simple things aren't so easy to do, right? But once you start to understand what you have to do, then it's a lot easier, right, to do what you have to do. So we learn to put the mind, keep the mind on the breath in the sitting meditation, you know, using directed thought. So the Buddha says, go to a quiet place, foot of a tree, an abandoned building, and start to train the mind to using mindfulness. Start to learn to put your mind where you want to put it. Begin with the breath at one small point, because that's a lot easier. Then, of course, he says, this is getting into the next factor, make the breath really comfortable, so you'll be more inclined to guide yourself there. And he says, then be aware of the full body, right? Step three. Great. So you're learning to put your mind on the breath and the full body out of the territory of thoughts, aversion, and desire on the breath and the body. Great. And then he says, of course, train yourself to do that because that's what you got to do if you want to be happy. You know, and how much are you going to meditate every day? Half hour? One retreat a year? No. You've got, if you want to train the mind to put it where you want to put it, if you want the mind to be where it needs to be so that you can find happiness, then you have to keep directing your attention to that spot. It's just not going to go there. It's just not going to go there when you get off the cushion. Maybe it goes there, you know, a little bit for, what, 10 minutes, 15 minutes after you get off the cushion, after a retreat, it kind of goes there a little bit, and then it's gone, right? I think the Buddha used to say that a lot. You know? So then it's gone, right? So you have to keep maintaining that mindfulness. You have to keep being mindful in all postures, which means be mindful of the breath in all postures, in your, all of your activities, which means as you go throughout the course of the day, mindful of the breath. Stay with the breath. Stay with the breath. Stay with the breath. Stay with the breath. I mean, of course, you know, it's hard to do that all day long, but the more you do that, the more you're going to do that. The more mindfulness you're going to develop. The more mindfulness you develop, the more the other factors will develop. The more the factors develop, the more you'll move towards a greater happiness in your life. I mean, you all know that if you focus your attention on the breath more and more during the day, those are better days, right? Those are better days. If you're out of your head and you're in the breath and in the body. So we practice this mindfulness, we practice directed thought, we practice mindfulness in all postures. Like right now. Like right now, even when you're listening, you can be mindful of the breath. Mindful of the breath as it comes in, mindful of the breath as it goes out. And you can see when you begin to do that, that you begin to start to move into a greater sense of ease, rapture, a little bit more tranquility, concentration, equanimity already start to develop when you do that. This is our practice. This is the practice of mindfulness, to put the mind on, to keep the mind on the object, beginning with the breath, beginning with directed, using directed thought. This is the training of the mind. This is the training that we develop for the factors to develop, so that the factors can develop, so that we can find a greater happiness in our life.